Today's daf in Maseches Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf chet. We're holding on the bottom of Zayin Amud Beis at the two dots. So we had the ma'amar of Rav Chisda before, in which he said, we just brought this up because we were talking about it in the context of the conversations yesterday about the various rishuyos and what the dinam of chayre rishus harav yachid and chayre rishus harav. And that got us involved in Mukum Arba al Arba as well, in terms of sticky materials and in terms of Chokikin Lahashlim, or small convenient use areas like little shelves in a wall in Rishus Rabim or in Rishus HaYochid. Now, in the context we were discussing over there, whether we actually need a Mukum Arba al Arba, we brought a raya and we said that Rav Chisda Tainet, that not kana brushut yachid vizarak v'nacha gabav afilo gavoa mea amachayav v'pnei brushut yachid ola ad l'rakia. So that was in the context of proving that it cannot be that Shmuel's statement of don't discuss l'malam yasara, obviously not talking about brushut yachid. But meanwhile, it enters into this discussion of what we've been talking about, because we never satisfactorily got to a conclusion about the various shitas of requiring a mokum arba al arba, and whether there's a difference between hanocha or akira, and furthermore, is there a difference between rishus hayochid and rishus harabim? Now, every time that we thought we had a raya, we always restricted it to a particular case. The case that Reb Chisda brought, which is that if you have a pole and something lands on top of a pole, and you threw it from a rishus harabim, and it lands on top of a pole in Rishus HaYochid, no matter how high the pole is, that you'd be chayev. Now that, of course, is all very nice in terms of being chayev, assuming that there was a hanocha, the main point being that even though it's 100 feet tall, makes no difference because it's still in Rishus HaYochid. But it beggars the question of how something landing on a pole is considered to be munah, since that's basically like a spike. We said before, anything that is not securely in its space is not considered to be in that space. So what do we do about that issue? Now, it seems clearly from here that Rav Chisda holds that you do not require a mokum of arba al arba. Now, once again, remember, this is going to bring us back, and this is discussion we had earlier. And so once again, we raise the point of Rebbe. So does it mean that Rav Chisda holds the same thing that Rebbe held? Because remember, Rebbe said that in the case where Zorak v'nacha gabeziz kol shehu, he says, and assuming that we're talking about from a Rishus HaYochid into a Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYochid, and you throw it even onto a small little piece of wood sticking out of the wall, and Rebbe says you're chayim. So apparently he does not hold that you require mokum arba al arba, whereas the chachomim are poetry. And this would mean that Rav Chisda essentially is following Rebbe's lead in this thing. Says Abaye, actually, now this girsa is not Rashi's girsa, and it is Seser, the sugya that we had earlier. So let us read the girsa the way Rashi himself has the girsa. And that is nothing about kulei amalo plike kid Rav Chisda, but rather, as we said earlier, Hocha bi'ilan ha'omed b'rishut ha'yachid, v'nofo notel b'rishut ha'rabim, v'zorak v'nach agabo, anofo. So remember that we explained away Rebbe earlier on Daf Dalet, and we said that what Rebbe was talking about when he said aziz koshu was not a little piece of something sticking out into nowhere, but rather it was the branch of a massive tree whose trunk was arba al arba. And the point over here was that the branch that sticks out from such a trunk is considered to be secure, similar to the idea of yodol shel adam that is chashuv. The tremendous chiddush over there was that even though the trunk of the tree is in a different rishus, so it's in rishut hayachid, we separate out the issue of shadi nofo batar gufa. Now remember, this was an issue that originally we had raised legabe a hand. We do not say shadi yodav batar gufa. Somebody's hand that is sticking out into a different rishos is not considered to be munach in the rishos where his body is. Remember, the Gemara went through a proof of that from the opening Mishnah of the Ani and the Asher. And therefore, in this case, where we've got the tree, We seem to be taking for granted, look, even though the branch is attached to a trunk, which is in Rishus HaYochid, that doesn't mean that we view the branch to be in Rishus HaYochid. It's still in Rishus HaRabim. Okay, but is it considered to be in Rishus HaRabim on a mokum of Arba al Arba? So we separated the issue of how secure the trunk makes the branch from the question of whether the trunk pulls the branch into the Rishus where the trunk is. And that's the way we explained it earlier. That seems to be the girsa that Rashi has over here as well. And Rebbe holds Amrina. Now, the question over here is, Shadi no fo, Batar gufo is not the point, according to Rashi, because according to Rashi's pshat, we're not looking at the shadi no fo. We're talking about that we're shadi in the sense of being machshivit. So it's only choshev. It's a borrowed language in this approach. And that makes it a little bit iffy, because until now the word shadi did not mean in terms of security. Whereas Rashi is learning, it means that it's chashiv. The same language that we used with the Yodah Shalonim is chashivale. So here we're using it as a borrowed sense of shadi nofo batar ikaro, that it should be considered to be chashiv and a mokum of arba al arba. So therefore, the Rabbanim disagree, and they say, we say no such thing. Now that, of course, as I say, is a little iffy. And because of that, other Rishonim learn that the case over here is talking about, indeed, the issue of shadi nofo batar ikaro, and that the question of the girsa initially is perfectly acceptable, according to this, that the kuli amalo pligik to the Rav Chisda, actually it has nothing to do with the Machlokas Rebbe and the Rabbanan. It's just that over here the question is, where did it land? If I threw it from Rishus HaRabim onto this, did it land in Rishus HaYochid, or did it land in the Rishus HaRabim? And that's the question, literally, whether Shadi Nofo Batar Ikaro, and do we view the extension of the tree in the other Rishus to actually be Munach in the Rishus where the trunk of the tree is? Totally different pshat, not the pshat that we understood from the Gemara earlier, or from the Girsa in the Gemara earlier. Now, we are about to start a brand new issue, which is considered to be, by the public who are generally misled, as one of the most difficult issues in the entire Masechet, if not in Shas. And it's actually childishly simple, as most such supposedly complicated issues are. And therefore, we will get through it very quickly and very easily. So what is basically the issue that is currently on the list of topics? Well, we've dealt with the Arba Rishuyas, but there's a couple of things that are still up in the air. Ari! So what it is that we need to worry about is, what would be the din of objects as opposed to the places? Are objects the equivalent of places? Will an object in another Rishus, will it be Miyachid Rishus to itself? That is one question. The other question is fascinating. The other question is this. What would be the din if you would throw something that has its own shame as a rishus into a different rishus? So let's say I throw a rishus hayochid from a rishus harabim into a rishus hayochid. What would be the din? I throw a rishus hayochid, arba amas, in the rishus harabim. Now, this is the way Rashi understands the issue that's coming up over here. And it's all predicated on the idea of the similarity to the Mishkan. So the makor of simply throwing things, as Otsah, is the fact that we understand that the people that were being Isaac in the Melechas HaMishkan would throw supplies one to another. So if you were working, let's say, as a tailor on something in the Mishkan, a big day kahuna, or the Uriot, or whatever, so you would ask for a needle from someone down the line, and he would throw you a needle. You would throw an Arba Amis across the Rishus HaRab. Fine. But what about throwing a Rishus? We do not find, remember we had this issue before, when we asked what would be the din of going through an Istavnit from Rishus HaRab to Rishus HaYochid. The question was, but where do we see that that's considered to be Otsah in the Mishkan? Well, this is a serious question. Where do we see that throwing a Rishus would be considered an act of Otsah in the Mishkan? We don't. And since we don't, we'll have to exclude it from the concept of Otsah. So remember again, Otsah is becoming more and more strictly defined. Not only do we need an Akira and Anocha, and not only do we also have to consider the issue about the security of the placement, the Gabe Akira Vahanocha, but we also have to define precisely what you do the Akira and Hanocha to in terms of the transference. Something that is not found to be the object of a Hotzah in the Mishkan is not considered to be a Hotzah. Therefore, our Gemara concerns itself with an object that is large enough to be defined as a Rishus Bifnei Atzmo. Once it's large enough to be defined as a Rishus Bifnei Atzmo, the question is, would there be a din of Zrika of a Rishus? Now, in order to further make that clear, we have to understand that certainly, if it is only large enough to be a carmelite, right, that's not going to give it a din of a rishus, because it far, remember, as far as the Torah is concerned, a carmelite not having the basic requirement of being 4x4 and lamala me'asara, it's not a rishus. It's a no place, which is called a mokum p'tur. So certainly, you can't be makil on Shabbos by creating a concept of a carmelis to change something from an object into a rishus. That's ridiculous. The Rabbanan would not have that koyach to undo the fundamental derisive vision that an object is an object is an object. So we only get into this problem when something would be, now obviously you can't throw a rishus a rabbi. So the only thing that we could be talking about is if you throw an object large enough to be a rishus hayachid. Now, that allows us to play some fascinating games. Why? Because most of the things that you would throw, first of all, are not square. Things that you throw are generally things like baskets, which in those days were very much rounded. Furthermore, it allows us to play games with the idea of virtual mechitzas. And remember, we spoke about virtual mechitzas earlier, that the Torah really doesn't insist that you have to have a visible mechitza. The Torah is very happy with virtual mechitzas, and it's very happy with virtual hanochas even. Because we talked about if you have something that is loved to the ground, alone your camera is filthy. If something is loved to the ground, and it's within 3 tvachim of the ground, then that gives it a halacha of a hanocha on the ground, even though it's still moving. It's considered to be on the karka. We've had this as a yesod in many, many places already so far. How can you say something is at rest on the ground when it isn't on the ground? Because of lovud. That same din of lovud and the din that we had legabi atraskal, which was called good achit mechitza, bring the edges of the mechitza down, or the idea of pitikra yored v'sotem, the edge of a roof comes down and seals things up, which was nogea the question also of Rishus HaRabim, and things that are up against Rishus HaRabim, whether they enclose it and therefore make it not a Rishus HaRabim, or the Lechi, or the Korah that we were talking about, the differences between them. We've talked about a lot of cases of virtuality. Another din of a virtual mechitza is the din of lovud on the mechitza, not the din of lovud on the object. So let's say you have a mechitza that reaches within 3 tvachim of the ground within, not up to, but within 3 tvachim of the ground, it would be considered to be attached to the ground. And therefore, even though the object is in movement and is currently coming down to a landing, the moment the object gets to be within 3 tvachim of the ground and it's facing in a way that allows its edges to be facing the ground, not its bottom, which we'll discuss why that's true. But the din of lovud of mechitzas, which is what we're interested in here, has to be that the mechitza end, just like pitikra yored v'sotem, the mechitza end is facing the ground. Now that allows us some very fascinating, all these issues get together over here. Let's consider this. A round object, in order to be a rishus hayochid, how large does it have to be? The din of 4x4 is not a din in the square amos, or tvachim actually, of 4x4. It is not 16 square tvachim. All of the dinim in Shabbos, and we're going to see this in many, many ways, including even the din of tchumim, all the dinim of Shabbos go according to the diagonal of the given rishus, which means that what you really need in order to have a rishus hayachid is something that has a diagonal of the square root of 2 times 4. Now, since in the Gemara, because obviously that's the Pythagorean theorem, since according to the Gemara, we round off Pythagoras to 1.4 as the square root of 2, in order for you to be able to have a Rishus HaYochid in a round area, like all the cases we were talking about with the Borot and so on, and certainly over here where we're talking about the case of the basket or something like that. So there we're going to need, according to Chazal, 5.6, because we're going to multiply 1.4 times the 4, which gives us 5.6, obviously. Now, we're going to do something with that and round it off right now to 6. And we're going to see why we do that. There's two basic approaches in the Rishonim as to why we do that. But what this means basically is this. If you have a round object, which we call here a kaveret. A kaveret means literally a beehive. And so these were actually originally designed by beekeepers as a great place for bees to make a home, and then they can open up and they can take out the parts of the hives that are not active then, of honey and so on. So the kaveret was a round basket, and the round basket that would have a space that would allow us to be 4x4 square, which means that it had to be actually round enough to accommodate a 4x4 square, which means that there needs to be a diagonal of 5.6 in order for us to fit that square, inscribe that square into the circle. If we make it a two-dimensional picture, we'll inscribe it into the circle of the basket. It will be Rishus HaYochid if it has a 5x6 a radius, and if it has a height of 10, right? Okay. Or I should say double the radius, obviously. So therefore, Taina's the Gemara like this. Omer Abaye. He says, Ora kaveret or shutarabi. You're standing in Rishus HaYochid. You pick up a kaveret basket, and you throw it. Now remember what's important here, because we're going to see it's nogea, a logistical issue. Baskets are made generally out of reeds. So a kaveret was made out of reeds. The reason that's important to us is because the chassis of reed baskets extends upwards and downwards. And then you put the orev, the woof, you put through it around, all around, right? And that's going to make a difference to us, but let's not think about that right now. Okay, guy picks up a basket. He throws the basket from Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYochid. If that basket is 10 tvachim high, but it is not 6 tvachim wide, he is chayav. Now, this is not really true. Why? Because if the basket was 5.6 tvachim wide, he would already not be chayav, right? Because it was already Rishus HaYochid, even if it was just the square root of 2 times the 4x4. So what we're doing over here is we're scaring people away. This is how Rashi understands it. And we're being machmer and say, listen, you're going to be chayev even if it is 5.6. It would have to be 6 tvachim in order for you to be potter, which isn't true. But okay, we're being machmer on them to scare them away. Tosfos learns, some of the Bali Tosfos learn, that actually it means exactly what it says. Because Rashi is talking about the inside space of this kaveret, right? And what he seems to be saying, though, if we're measuring 5.6, which is the way we started talking, it seems that Abaye doesn't care the way Rashi's learning, that the whole thing is literally only 5.6, or therefore he made it 6 from the outside. But that's not really true, Tainas Rabbeinu Chananel. Because why don't you have to worry about needing only the inside to measure 5.6? So now if you're going to measure your kaveret, you've got to take into consideration that your kaveret has walls, and that kaveret, the walls have to be big enough to accommodate that, which means that the entire kaveret is going to be large enough to equal 6, not just 5.6, because that's the standard thickness of the two sides of the wall of the kaveret, from one end, its diameter from one end to the other. Okay, so we have a question of whether we look, in terms of measuring it, we look at the outside or whether we look at the inside. This is also a question, Legabe, something like a bore that has an area, raised area around it for, you know, where you put your bucket into a well. So in that case, you have a special situation where the outside is important because things are set down on the outside. Generally speaking, it seems absolutely clear that we measure the area of a Rishus HaYochid by not the outside mechitzas, but rather the space that those mechitzas enclose. Here, when it comes to an object where you can use the outside of the object, that may not be the case. And because of that, that could be the explanation of why we say 6 instead of saying 5.6. So the additional 0.4 of the tefachim is the 0.4 of the both sides of the walls. Okay. Once, however, says Abaya, once it's already big enough to be able to put an area of 4x4 into it, which means it's 6 or actually 5.6, according to Rashi, then you would be potter. Why? Rechova shisha potter. Because there we're talking about not throwing an object, but throwing an actual reshus, and we have no place in the Torah where there's a chiyah for throwing a reshus. Rava says you're forgetting a logistical problem, and therefore you made a mistake. This is not a good way to teach the halacha, because in reality, even if the basket is small and it's less than Rechova Shisha, and it is an object rather than a Rishus, you're still going to be potter if it's 10 Tvachim high. Why? Because since it is made out of reeds, and this is what we mentioned earlier, there's always going to be a reed sticking up a little bit higher than the top of the basket. You don't get it exactly to be 10 Tvachim high. And the logistical problem would be that in order for something to be munach in a reshus, to be mechayiv, this is a new din, in order for something to be munach in a reshus, for you to be considered to be chayiv, it has to be fully in that reshus. So if part of it extends outside of the reshus, forget it. It's not munach. And therefore, you're putter because there was no hanocha. That's all. Why does Abaye argue with that? Obviously, it's a true din. So Rashi and Tosis both explain the only reason that Abaya argues is because he feels that a krumish shalkana, which is a little piece of reed, is not significant in terms of the object, and therefore it does not mean that part of the object is outside of the asar tvachim. You could clip it off and nobody would notice. Okay, that's a side issue. Now, how about if you throw it so that it's upside down? Now it's coming down for a landing. Let's imagine it as a rocket ship. So it's coming down for a landing. It's gradually going down. The moment that it comes within Lovud area, which is anywhere within 3 Tvachim, it has landed. The fact that it continues to move until it's completely at rest on the earth is irrelevant to us, because we look at the moment of the Hanocha as technically defined. And the moment is within 3 Tvachim, Lovud kicks in. And therefore, it has virtually landed. Brilliant. Therefore, you do not need 10 Tvachim. All you need in order to turn it into a Rishus is slightly more than 7 Tvachim and a Mashuhu. If it's 7 Tvachim and 1 Mashuhu only, then that Mashuhu comes within 3 Tvachim. Within means any amount within. Mashu. The moment that it comes within, it's exactly 10 Tvachim high. Right? And now it would be coming down if it was Shiva v'mashu. So then even if it was Shiva u'mashu, by the time that Mashu gets into the Shlosha Tvachim, it was only an object. And because of that, you're chayev, because the whole thing has landed now in Rishus Harabim. Rashi learns, we'll see this about Chlokas Rashi Tosfos. Rashi learns we're talking about the original case where you do not have 5.6, or as the Gemara calls it, 6, to have an inscribed area of Arba al Arba Bifnim. That's Rashi's understanding. Because of that, the entire object has landed in the Rishus Harabim, and therefore you're Chayev. But if it has Shiva v'mechtza, and again, this is not really true. It's not Shiva Umechza, but we're being Machmir. It's Sheva Umashahu plus. Anything that is plus that Mashahu means that when the object has come to rest, virtually to rest, part of it is sticking up outside of the Rishus HaRabim because it's above 10 Tvachim. Well, then everybody agrees, of course, it's not considered Tanocha because it's not fully in that Rishus. And therefore, you would be putter. Okay, this is Rashi's approach, who insists that we have to be talking about something that was less than the case, the original case, less than six. Masha Enkein, the Riva in Tosfos says, no. If it's even Rechava Shisha, if it's Sheva Vamashahu, you would be Chayev, because over there the Mechitas are not 10 Tfachim high. But on the other hand, if you have something that is Shisha, if it's less than Shisha, then it's not considered Bichlal to be within the idea of Lavud. Because in order for it to be Lavud, it has to have Mechitzas that are Choshev Mechitzas to something that has an area that's Choshev within it. So he holds we wouldn't have even said Lavud in such a case. Because first, you've got to start off with these Choshuva Mechitzas. Okay, but this is, again, a side issue. So all that we're talking about over here is a very simple idea. Is something an object? Is something a Rishus? Is something fully in the Rishus that it was thrown into in the Rishus HaRabim? Those are the questions, and everything else follows simply from that. Now, the next thing is, as we saw before, when we introduced the idea of Chore Rishus HaRabim, so we introduced the concept of usability, which makes something bottled to Rishus HaRabim. I mentioned to you earlier that we're going to have interesting cases about usability, and this is the most interesting, and that is that Ula said, if you have a pole that is precisely 9 Tvachim high in Rishus HaRabim, which is very convenient. And the reason that it's very convenient is because it's just the right height to adjust a backpack. So when your backpack is falling off, you need to get it properly around your shoulders. You're always looking for something, maybe a garbage pail, a mailbox, something that you can back up to just hold that backpack up for a moment. An amud of 9 tefachim is a perfect backpack checker. And therefore, that is considered to be by definition, part of the Rishus HaRabim. So if Rabim Mechatvim Alav, the people walking through the Rishus will put their backpack on it, then if you threw something from 4 Amos away and it lands on top of this Amud, it would be Chayev completely. And there would be no question of its not really being in the Rishus HaRabim, and there's not even a question of, at least according to Rashi, of its needing Arba al Arba. So therefore, if let's say you were throwing, or from a Rishus HaYochid, or from 4 Amos away, it has a din of the Rishus HaRabim itself. Why? Because less than 3, we saw before, it doesn't matter, because the Rabim are always considered to be part of it, stepping over it, we discussed before, a piece of dung, or things that would stick you if you're not wearing shoes. That was the machlokas we had earlier. Between 3 and 9, so something that is high, let's say it's a foot high. A foot high, I mean, I'm not going to sit there and climb over it. I'll walk around it. So anything mishlosha v'atisha, people don't walk on it, and they also, it's too low for me to put my backpack and adjust it. But if it's exactly 9 tvachim high, then it is definitely used by people, and therefore it's considered to be botel to the Rishus HaRabim. Omale Abaye l'Rav Yosef, would this work if it was deep instead of high? Is it the same idea would be true about something that you could put your backpack into? Let's say you want to take a break or something, get yourself a Coke at a stand. You don't want to keep your backpack on your back. So if there was a place over there you could throw your backpack into, Is that also going to be considered to be part of the Rosh Hashanah Rabim, literally, instead of it's being a Mokum Tur or a Carmelist, depending on how wide it was? Omar Leis or Rabbi Yosef said to him, yes, it's exactly the same thing. Rava says it is absolutely not the same thing. My taima, tashmish ayideat chak lo shmei tashmish. This is the machlokas we had earlier about how convenient the usage has to be, not how appropriate the usage has to be. It's much more difficult to deal with something that you have to bend down and use instead of something that is really convenient for you to just put your backpack against. Etvei Revada Bar Matna L'Rava. If you are correct, then how do you, Rava, who say that it's not true about the Guma, how do you understand the following price? Haitaku pato munachat parashut harabim. Govoa asara v'rachava arba'a. Ein metatalin lo mitocha l'rashut harabim. V'lo mirashut harabim l'tocha. So suppose you have a box in the middle of Rosh Hashanah Rabim, and the box itself is Rosh Hashanah Yochid. So it was 10 tefachim high, and it was 4x4, and it has all of the dinim of the Reshut HaYochid. The fact that it's a box does not take away its din of being Reshus, and you're not allowed to take things out of it or put things into it. But if it's less than that, in either way, it's less than that, either less than 10, or it's less than 4. So in that case, you would be allowed to. Why would you be allowed to? Wouldn't it be a Carmelist if it had 4x4? And the answer is that Carmelites, says Rashi, Carmelites are not called a Carmelite if they're a Kli. So Bichlal, an object, is not Shayach to be a Carmelite. Now, this is what Rashi says, and obviously that contradicts what I told you before. I told you before the reason that we don't worry about a Carmelite is because the Rabbanan cannot create a Carmelite that's going to be a Kula. They can only relate a Carmelite that's a Chumrah. Well, all Rashi had to say before was because it's an object, and an object can't be a Carmelite. This is a big issue that seems to be a contradiction in Rashi. I'm just mentioning it because I'm afraid when you would review, you would realize that this is doesn't make any sense. Okay, so the Mefarshim on Rashi talk about why it's not the same. In any event, let's continue on to the last words of the Braita, which is the problem for Rava. It says, Pachot became mitatalim. If it's not that large, you can. And so, too, is true about a guma. Now, if it says it's true about a whole, so then that means that it would apply. I mean, I'm assuming it means this last part. When you said that if it's Pachot became mitatalim, so even if it's a whole, that is, let's say, only 9 tefachim deep, it has the same din as Ula's case of a pole, 9 tefachim high, which is beferish, the opposite of what Rava claimed. Rava claimed the whole is never considered to be part of Rosh Hashanah Rabim. No, says the Gemara, according to Rava, it's going only back on the Resha, that a whole, that is more than that, that's 10 tefachim deep, and so on, that's considered to be a makam that is Rosh Hashanah Yochid. I should, by the way, just point out that there is a machlokas rishonim, even though both Rashi and Rambam say that the case of the amud does not have to be 4x4 because of the fact that it's so convenient, it's the equivalent of a hand, and therefore it's achshavei. There are some shittas among the rishonim who claim that Ula's din of the pole of 9 is only if it was 4x4, which is a little bit difficult to swallow, but anyway, some tine it. Let's see if we can show that Rava is wrong. Nitkavin lishbot b'rishut harabim v'niach eruvo b'bor. L'mala mi'asar ha'tvachim eruvo eruv, l'mata mi'asar ha'tvachim ein eruvo eruv. This is based on a simple idea. As you know, an eruv works by providing a person a virtual home that is up to 2,000 amas away from his real home, and by putting a meal there, again, it's sort of a virtual meal, but by putting a meal in that spot, you're indicating that this is your home for Shabbos. And then you go back home and you live in your home and eat in your home. But because of this pretense, we allow your tchum to be extended. This is the Rabbanan tchum, of course. We allow it to be extended by an additional 2,000 amas as if you were in that spot. But the most important idea over there, of course, is that you have access to your meal in that spot. Now, suppose a guy had the idea that he is going to make the spot where he views himself as having his Mokum Shvita on Shabbat in Erishas HaRabim. And he puts his Erev, in order to protect it for people taking it or seeing it, he puts it into a hole in the ground. So then it depends. If it was 10 tfachim high, which we'll see what that means in a moment, it's still a good Erev. But if it's lower than the 10 tfachim, it's not a good Erev. Now, what is that talking about? Is it talking about a bar that has 10 tfachim? And the question is, if you say it was above, it means that you put your Erev higher than the bottom of the pit, closer to you, so it's not 10 tfachim away from you. And lamata means you put it all the way down at the bottom, and then it was 10 tfachim. That's ridiculous. If the bor is a reshus b'fnei atzmo, it makes absolutely no difference if you put something in reshus hayachid, whether you put it all the way at the top of the reshus hayachid, or you put it all the way at the bottom of the reshus hayachid, you still can't take it out into the reshus harabim, in which case your erev is not in the same place that you are, even though it's only 1 millimeter away. It makes no difference. You are not allowed to take it into your rishus, and therefore, if your kafana was to be shoves in the rishus harabim, you do not have an erev. So mali lamala, mali lamata, hu b'makom echad ve'ruvo b'makom acher. So what we've got to be talking about when we say 10 is whether the bor has 10 tvachim in its depth. And it says over here that if it doesn't, and you're above 10 tfachim, meaning closer to the ground than 10 tfachim, it says it is a good Erev. So you see against Rava that even though it's inconvenient to bend down and pick things out of a hole, you see from here that Tashmish HaYedei HaTchak, Shmei Tashmish, and it's no different. You put your Erev there, you put your backpack there. The idea is that it is in the Rishus HaRabim. So how do you explain that? Well, depending when you would ask him, Rava had different answers. Sometimes he explained that it did not mean that the guy was in a Rishus HaRabim. The guy wasn't making an Erev in the middle of a public thoroughfare on a Fifth Avenue. It means he was in a Carmelite, a public space. We just call it a Rishus HaRabim because it's not like the bor, which is the Rishus HaYochid. That's all. That was one time where he would answer it. Or it could even be talking about that he is literally in Rishus HaRabim, in the middle of the main highway, and his Erev is inside a Carmelite, inside of a bor. It wasn't big enough. It was only 9 tefachim, so it wasn't a Rishus HaYochid. Okay, and so how is he allowed to get his Erev? Ah, brilliant. At what moment in time is the Erev called your Erev to define you as having a Rishus to be shoveit outside of your home, the minute that Shabbos begins, right? Well, the minute that Shabbos begins is Bein HaShmashot. And Bein HaShmashot is really a suffix, whether it's Friday or whether it's Shabbos. And Rebbe said that anything that the Rabbanan asserted as a Gzeira de Rabbanan, which includes Carmelite, does not go into effect Bein HaShmashot. Lo gazru alav Bein HaShmashot, which means that at the instant that your Erev needed to be an Erev, it was okay to carry it out of that bor. That's all that counts. The fact that afterwards you couldn't carry it out is irrelevant. And by the way, do not think I'm playing games with you and that I'm just saying something that's far off. I'll prove it to you. And it's definitely, this is for sure the correct way of understanding it, because look at the Mishnah. That's not. We've got a mission a little bit later, another 100 daf or so, that says like this. Im haya rekak mayim v'rshut rabim alechet bo, hazorek v'tocha arba mot chaya. If there's a puddle of, really a rekak is worse than a puddle, it's like a sunken area that's filled with dirt or sand, and it's got water in it. But even though it's in the middle of the street, people just keep driving straight through it, right? If you throw from 4 amos away into it, you would be chayev. And when we say it's a rekak, which means it's not very deep, it's a puddle, how deep could it be to still be called a rekak? We're talking about something less than 10 tefachim. And I got another halacha for you. And now the weirdest thing, the Mishnah repeats word for word what it just said. Furthermore, a rekak mayim shereshut harabim halechet bo, Hazorek letocho arba mot chayav. She just said exactly those words before. So now I can explain and justify why we would say the word rakak, rakak twice, okay? Because it wants to tell us it doesn't matter whether it's the winter, it doesn't matter if it's the summer, namely, it doesn't matter if it's the rainy season, and it doesn't matter if it's the dry season. Why is that important? Why would I think it makes a difference? Well, because suppose the Mishnah was telling us only about the dry season. I would have said, okay, so even though, you know, you're going to get your feet wet if you walk through it, it's not so bad to cool off your feet in the middle of a hot summer day. So maybe because of that, people walk through it. It's called Rosh Hashanah. But I mean, during the winter, nobody wants to get their feet wet. And if it would have told me in the Mota Geshamim, we would say, well, forget about your feet wet. Your feet are going to get filthy. But if the whole street is covered with mud anyway, because it's the winter season. So anyway, it doesn't matter. Since people are dirty, so they don't care about getting dirty by stepping into this. Bashenkin. If you're talking about the summertime where people are not dirty, maybe they wouldn't go into it. Fine. So it mentions it twice. But why does it say the whole thing twice? Why does it say, if you were going, why repeat the whole thing? Trey Zimne, for what? Therefore, the point over here that it's coming to teach me, Allah Shmamina, Hiluch Ayideatchak, Shmei Hiluch. It's stressing Rosh Hasharabi Mehalech to teach me the only thing that makes it a Rosh Hasharabi is the fact that people are walking through it. But the fact that people would be using it, Tashmish Ayadei Atchak, oh no, that's not called usability. That's why, Shmamina, I insist, says Rava, that I am absolutely right about this and that you've got to explain anything that looks differently. You're going to have to explain it. You could explain the bride to the way I explained it. You got a better explanation, whatever you want. But I'm definitely right about my yesod. Tashmish ayadei atchak, lav shma tashmish.